Thanks a lot, Stephen, for fitting us in on this agenda. We thought it was important today to get on this agenda because this group, the Healthcare Business Action Group, has been together for 18 months or so. And we're actually at a point now where we're developing some business requirements and moving it on to the Hardware and Software Action Group for some guidance. Some of our colleagues here that are going to talk today are going to get into some of the details around various areas we think we can use some research help. And clearly, as an industry, this is one area that we're starting to recognize where we do need to start reaching out and getting some direct help from you all. So we thank you for the opportunity today to talk to you, and hopefully this will be an ongoing dialogue that we entertain with this group. What I thought we'd do is just do a quick round of introductions. In addition to me, we have Bob Celeste from EPC Global, who's the director of the Business Action Groups, and he's responsible for facilitation of the Business Action Groups. Ten Ding, who's a director with McKesson. In spite of what it may say in the agenda, I don't think, Ted, you've gotten the promotion yet, but maybe next week to vice president and board member, but hopefully that'll happen next week, Ted. But it's nice to know you can go over to Cambridge, you get a promotion. And Chuck Ceramic, who is with EPC Global now, but he's actually on loan from Johnson & Johnson. And about a year or so ago, J&J, we took a decision that we thought that it was very important to help the development of industry standards. So we graciously let Chuck go to EPC Global to help facilitate this development of standards in the healthcare industry. So as you see on the agenda here, Bob's going to give us an overview to what's been going on within the BAG, the Healthcare and Life Science Business Action Group. Chuck is going to talk around item-level tagging. We had hoped to have Tom Pizzuto here today, who actually was a member from the Healthcare and Life Science Group from Wyeth, who was our chairman of that group, but Tom couldn't get up here because of business reasons. Ted's going to cover pedigree and the update around messaging around the pedigree, and then we'll certainly entertain any questions, so we'll all participate in the panel discussion. I just thought maybe I would touch on a couple points here. Why are we doing this? It's not like fast-moving consumer goods where you've got Walmart and Target saying, no, you must, and Department of Defense coming out with mandates. The reason why we're very interested in this is because of some of the regulatory requirements that are starting to emerge. So we had the FDA back in 2004 that issued some guidelines around widespread adoption around RFID at the item level to begin tracking and tracing products. But the reality is the issue that we're really dealing with is patient safety. This is an issue that this industry takes very, very to heart because, frankly, we're all affected by it. We want to ensure that the drugs and devices that you receive are genuine products. We don't want to go down the path, and clearly you all understand the issues that we could encounter if counterfeit products are out there. So we're very, very concerned about this. So we're also responding to the movement within the states where they're adopting what are called pedigree regulations. Right now, we've got a large number of states that are moving in this particular area, and this requires chain of custody tracking of the ownership of products. And as a result, both the FDA and the FDA particularly feels that this could be a key element to the track and trace of products. So we felt that with the movement within the states and the FDA, we thought it was very important to be able to collaborate with them to show some movement in the industry, the development of our standards. But this is not just a U.S. issue, and there are some other motivations that are going over in Europe, particularly Belgium, Italy. I know we've seen some movement in some other countries as well, where they're expecting serialization of items. Now, to be very clear, Belgium and Italy, they're not expecting RFID to be applied to product. All they're asking for is serialization of that item, mass serialization. The movement within Europe is predominantly driven because of pharmacy fraud. That's the reason why they're looking for serialization of items, because they want to know when a particular product is dispensed that gets reimbursed and only for one time, not multiple times. So these are some of the emerging regulatory drivers that we're starting to see within the pharmaceutical industry. This is a model that the FDA has proposed, and we keep this in mind as we continue our discussions. And I think this is very important. It actually fits with a lot that was said earlier by the other industries that presented today of, you know, to really enable a safe and secure supply chain, you need to be able to track and trace product, but you also need to be able to authenticate product as well. So in here, I've got a bit of a build here, but to move us along, we think it's very important that authentication is needed to be able to ensure that the product is genuine. That really becomes a foundational element for any track and trace system. Clearly, the pedigree allows us to be able to monitor and track that chain of custody and changes as that product moves through the pipeline. So when you look at authentication, there's also a couple different elements of that. We're looking at the product identity, but we're also looking at the physical characteristics of the product as well. So it's not simply, does it have an ID number? Because if you think of RFID at its basic element and mass serialization at the basic element, what you've been able to identify is that package and the number that's been assigned to that package. What you don't know are about the contents of the package, was it potentially tampered with, things like that. So that becomes gets us more into the area of physical features. Certainly in the future, it would be nice to see if RFID could play a role in a method to ensure that the product has not been tampered with. But right now, it's in its current incarnation, cannot do that. But we think over time, it would be nice to see what role RFID could play there to ensure that the product has not been tampered. On pedigree, you know, we talk about track and trace, and, you know, so where is the product and where is it headed and where was the product? So it's the element of looking where it is, but then also being able to look backwards. And that's a very large issue for us. Our supply chain is not directly from manufacturer to retailer. There is a distributor in the middle there, and there can also be secondary distribution as well. So what you find is our supply chain can be a bit complicated when you start factoring in also return goods, and the retail pharmacy may not ship those return goods back to the distributor who originally distributed them to them. So you get into some very complicated situations to figure out where the product was and from whence it came. So this becomes, as we conducted our work over the last 18 months, this is the base model that we've been working with and trying to develop some specifications for our industry based upon this model. So with this, I'm going to turn it over to Bob, you know, after an intro of what's driving the industry, and Bob's going to talk about the actions within the HLS bag and how we've organized our efforts and some of our current activities. So, Bob?
Thanks, Mike. So I just want to give an overview of Why healthcare is looking at RFID. Basically, it's to form the safe and secure supply chain. So you see things up here about item level tagging, electronic pedigree, track and trace, product authentication. And the group actually has a very regimented way of going through this, of developing the capabilities that they like, the scenarios, the use cases, and then any variants on those use cases. Our first capability that we started with was pedigree management. And as Mike talked about, that was primarily driven through the regulations that the industry had. So I'm actually going to spend most of my time on this slide, and I'll give you a second to sort of soak it in. We're hoping that the Auto ID members in the audience will take a look at some of these check marks. These are areas that we feel that Auto ID can help us out with. Basically, this slide is broken into a few areas. The blue areas is our structure. So for each one of these blue areas, there's the co-chairs, and they all report up into the tri-chair area. So you see this, the strategy work group, information, technology, R&D, and process work groups. Last year, when we looked at things like pedigree management, one of the things we realized was, and we've talked about a lot today, was security. And the requirements are pretty clear. The people in the supply chain need to, and sometimes customers, would need to read and write the tags. The bad guys don't need to do that. And that's our requirement. To that point, because we don't have a very simple, cost-effective, easily mechanism for securing the tags and the information in the supply chain, there's a number of areas where you see here where we're looking at security. In the areas of item-level tagging, how to physically secure a tag. In the areas of serialization, how do we secure the number on a tag. In the areas of decommissioning, how do we ensure that a tag does not get removed from a discarded bottle and re-enter the supply chain? Things like that. So security actually has broad ramifications as far as the areas that we're working on. Some of the areas that we'll be working on in 2006 that are kind of interesting are track and trace, and I want to make a difference in your mind between what track and trace is and what pedigree is. So pedigree, and I think Chuck actually coined this phrase today, was pedigree, if you think about it, is a business to regulator message. Pedigrees can be started by paper. They can be started through an EDI transaction or through an XML transaction. Not easily queryable for an industry. So we're also looking this year at the track and trace, the vocabulary that this industry will use, and the understanding they'll have at a business level of what all of the events mean when you move product with RFID tags on them. The other areas I'll point out that will be new is, and we originally saw these as variants, but so we'll be doing a little bit of gap analysis between the requirements we have today and when we bring companies that focus in these areas. And those areas like cold chain, medical devices, which will start up soon, and biologics, and how they affect and how they add requirements to our pack. So I think I may be done with that. That was my one slide. So we'll give Chuck.
Okay, I'm here again subbing for Tom Pizzuto with regard to item level tagging and the work that work group has done for the healthcare and life sciences bag. This group consisted of a series of about, I guess, 32 individuals that were part of the item level tagging work group. 10 were from fast moving consumer goods. 10 were from healthcare and life sciences, and 10 were from the Hardware Action Group within EPC Global. In addition to that, we had Dan Ingalls from Auto ID Center here working with us, and we also had an individual from the Architecture Review Council within EPC Global. So that group was pulled together from the three bags to represent those bags and their interests with respect to turning requirements into solutions, or at least into understandable requirements for the Hardware Action Group to act upon. The objectives that we had before us was, again, because we were basically business action groups, was to really define the business scenarios and requirements that would drive the way we intended to deploy and adopt RFID technology. We started out with the business scenarios, again, focusing on item level. Case and pallet had been pretty well covered, you know, in a fine fashion from FMCG. Item level had not. It was paramount of importance to healthcare and life sciences, and yet it was also of significant importance to both FMCG and DOD. We went into tremendous detail addressing the operating environments in which item level tagging would have to perform. Min-max read and write ranges were critical to us because it was a very different set of scenarios from pallet and case. Security requirements, which you've heard all day long, were as important for us as they have been for all of you, both in the other industry presentations as well as the Auto ID Labs work that you've been doing to date. Privacy features, critical to healthcare and life sciences. Again, we have significant concerns there that unless we educate the public well enough to understand the value of this technology and its use in their best interest, it will be a challenge getting adoption. We have a number of products, controlled substances that in the pharma industries we have to move out to customers. These need to be shielded and secured so that others do not know what is being sent. We don't want these tags going out live to customers and consumers because they, in turn, are paranoid about knowledge of medication consumption, being made available to those around them. And lastly, memory features. This area, you know, is how do we want to use the memory that will be on the chip in the most efficient and effective way. The progress we've made to date, and this again has this group has been working, I guess, since about late July of 2005. We delivered a series of item level requirements to that group. It was about 32 pages worth of requirements spanning both, all three, HLS, FMCG, and DOD, as well as 60 business scenarios that we felt well demonstrated the way this technology needed to work for those three groups. January 16th and 17th, we narrowed that down. We winnowed it down to about seven critical scenarios that it was the intention of the hardware action group and the vendor community supporting the Hardware Action Group to do demonstrations of those seven scenarios. And those seven scenarios are the ones listed here. They span, again, the three business action groups I'm here to represent. Hanging garments on metal, on mobile metal hanger racks creates a real dilemma for the apparel industry from a reader perspective, a tenant perspective. The Doctor portal, same thing. If you look at it all, across all three of those groups, you know, we need to be able to read accurately. And particularly when you get to the healthcare side, we are not comfortable with, you know, 99% reads. We really do need 100% reads. Apparel point of sale, again, was a scenario we picked because it represented one of the more challenging point of sale scenarios that needed to be shown to be effective. DVDs and adjacent shelf slots, that particular scenario, again, represent close packing of a product on metal shelves, a dense reader scenario, more or less. Vials and ampoules in a case. Here again, this was a read scenario. And for us, this represents probably one of the smallest products that we'll be tagging, and it represented a challenge for us both on a read and write perspective. The speed at which these move across the packaging lines is of a concern, so we need real accuracy there. Exactly. And probably the most challenging scenario that the HAG faces in the work ahead of them is that of the retail pharma mixed tote scenario. This is where the wholesalers will put together, you know, particularly the wholesalers will put together a tote of product that could represent, you know, a dozen or better manufacturers' products, all tagged differently, all kinds of different products of all sorts of form factors, of materials, and of contents, all together. The orientation of antennas, you know, it's random orientation, so it's going to be truly a challenge for them to demonstrate that one. And then the last one, the vial and ample write scenario, was the only write scenario that we did include in this because, you know, we felt that this was the one that represented things very close together, very small form factor, going at a particular pace. The areas of central focus and concern for us in these demonstrations that are coming up are really to look at performance considerations. And again, this is the operation of the tags, operations between tags and readers, operations of fixed readers and the presence of mobile readers. You know, again, this is in the retail end of the supply chain that we're addressing. And lastly, operation in dense reader environments. There, again, it's inventory takes that are occurring in the retail setting, either in the store or in the back rooms, with lots of readers, lots of antennas, tons of products. Security considerations. Here, as you've heard all day long, you know, the interest here is in manageable, affordable, and non-intrusive security solutions. We just, you know, can't afford the cost, you know, of the detail or the latency that might be introduced with certain types of of encryption and decryption requirements. So this is an area that we really would like to work very closely with the the labs on. Memory read and write locking. This is hopefully, you know, a solution for us as we move forward with respect to shielding certain pieces of information that we need to shield as products move through the supply chain, yet make them visible at different points in the supply chain for efficiency and effectiveness of those operations. And lastly, decommissioning of tags. Bob mentioned that earlier in the discussion. This is an area that, again, for the Healthcare and Life Sciences Group is of particular concern because, you know, we want to make sure that we have a way of either killing or partially killing tags as it goes out to the consuming population and possibly bringing it back if we want at a later date when we want to use it in a much more progressive fashion. The dense reader environment considerations. Here we're having trouble because every one of those scenarios is unique to the business or the operation that's performing them. And how we're going to replicate something like that in our test coming up is going to be a real challenge. But we do have dense reader scenarios in these various locations throughout the supply chain, either at the dock doors, at the racking and the distribution centers, at the shelves in the retail store, and even at customer checkout. So it's a concern for us in terms of interference. And lastly, the mobile readers entering the field of stationary readers. Again, when you know, the Nokia phone example of being able to go in and determine to read a tag, you know, our concerns were, well, is this really going to impact the intelligent shelf readers that may be in place or not? And it seems like from the research that's been done today by Auto ID Labs here, you know, that's one that we're not going to have to worry too much about. Now, oops. I'm not going to go into detail on these, but these are, just to give you an example of the depth of detail and the comprehensiveness in which we defined our business scenarios to capture the operating environments in which these tags would have to work. We measured everything from where in the scenario it would occur, the number of tags that would have to be read, you know, at that particular point, the interrogation region that the readers would be impacted by, the tag antenna sizes and the variety of those tag antenna sizes, maximum read ranges, maximum tag velocity, or in cases when they're stationary, how long are they stationary to allow a read. The reader reliability, again, this is something that we, you know, feel very strongly about, being as close to 100 as possible. And then the last one were notes on the materials and makeups of what these scenarios were all about. A good example, again, going back to the retail pharma tote, you know, here again you're looking at liquids, blister packs, tablets, syringes, foil metal packages, all in a tote, you know, to be read with random oriented placement in that tote. So these are very, very challenging demonstrations. We know hopefully that most of it will be successful and we'll move forward with getting solutions. And where we are now is we're proceeding in this second phase, which is turning all of this over to the HAG for them to take on. There is a little wrap-up work that's still expected of our group, and that's to get a better sense of what the hospital demands are. Unfortunately, you know, today we haven't had hospital representation, you know, as directly and strongly as what we have needed, you know, in the HLS community. But we do need to get more information there because that represents a possible frequency issue for us and likewise more complexity. So the HAG is going to confirm that the technology vendors that are going to work with them in these demonstrations, which they think will be somewhere between 6 and 12 companies working with us, We want to make sure they cover the seven scenarios in an equal fashion so they don't all go after scenario one and five, you know, and the others don't get addressed. That's going to be the challenge for the HAG to make sure they work that out. They're going to do the work between February and March 22nd, at which time these demonstrations are going to be provided back to the three business action groups, HLS, FMCG, and DOD. And then we will see where we go from there in terms of what they can do and what they can't. So out of that, we expect a lot of opportunities to come back to you and ask for assistance in drilling down on how we can turn something that doesn't look like it can work today into something that can, you know, 6 or 9 months, a year, year and a half out. Okay?
I'm Ted. I'm going to try to go through with you guys what we've done in the bag for the pedigree side of the business. Again, Mike opened up with some very leading drivers of what's causing us to do this, and really the driver is not pedigree, but the health. But our driver is really patient safety and healthcare. Okay. Again, our lightning rod for us to move forward in the pedigree space was caused by the FDA report that was issued in February of 2004. You know, so it appears that we do have a counterfeit problem, and that how are we going to deal with that problem? And the report indicated that the best way to do that was to use RFID-based systems. Right, so I think you guys have seen these products. You know, on one side is the good product, on the right side, left or right side depending on the product, is showing you the good bile and the bad products. So how are you going to tell the difference, right? So they're saying RFID is the way to go, right? The problem is what? The problem is we have too many cooks in the kitchen. For us, we would love to comply. I think the industry wants to comply. I think it's the right thing to do for us, the right thing to do for the nation, right? But if you look at this, we have here 30-plus states that have written pedigree laws now. I represent McKesson, and McKesson is a wholesale distributor of pharmaceutical drugs. We cannot afford to write systems for, 30 different states, basically. So we really need to have a model, a consistent model. The model that Mike showed would be great to have. But unfortunately, Florida, the first one that's coming up for us, which we put a lot of effort behind in July 1st of 2006, indicated that we have to be in compliance to their model first, and then followed by January 1st of 2007 is California. And then there's various laws already in place, like in regulatory process, like Nevada, like Texas, already in progress in writing regulations that may interfere with what has already been proposed by Florida. So the real benefit for us, and so to speak, is that the models that have been proposed by the other, quote, 29, 30-plus states here differs significantly from Florida. So there might be some consolidation, so to speak, hopefully by the models. And what we're looking for is some federal interaction here that will allow us to do that. Okay. So really, again, and I'll talk about a little bit about the solution is what? Identification and tracking. So, but how do you do that? I had not heard anything today that tells me that says that we need to do the entire supply chain, all products in the supply chain. That's not what we need to have done here. We got to do some type of, I don't think there's sufficient RFID capacity in the industry to solve and meet all of the demand necessary to enable the entire supply chain of pharmaceutical products. So, there's got to be some approach, some thinking that says that what's a rational approach, rational adoption approach here. Is it high demand guys only? Is it the top 100? Is it the guys that are most counterfeited? So we need help and we need some guidance here. Okay. But again, we're forced by the Florida pedigree law to enable the whole supply chain. But if you look at, without going into what Florida is all about, that model is fundamentally flawed, okay, in the way we would think about a pure chain of custody and a pedigree model. So the Florida pedigree model says it's not the data element, so to speak. It's what you're trying to accomplish here. We need this basic stuff. And they don't even talk about serialization. Obviously, when you counterfeit product is at an item level or a bottle level, and they're looking at tracking only lot and expiration date, so to speak. So there was other industry groups that have come together, not just states. You know, I didn't show you the whole picture here. You know, there has been NABP, then there's other groups, uniform. There's a uniform pedigree council that's been put together by different industry groups as well, representing, you know, various factions here. But they came up with a different set, you know, of data elements associated with what it should be in a pedigree. So really, and without defining, you know, what they did was in those groups was define, quote, the data elements. Obviously, the data elements are of value because I'm an IT guy. You know, I work with data elements. But what's more important? What's the process associated with that definition of what a pedigree is, right? All right? Who updates the data? You know, who says what data should be there? When should you update it? How do I share the information? Oh, and then from the process side, you know, where does it start? Who's responsible? Who will enforce? You know, again, we talked about what is authentication here. You know, it's not just a number. It's also the overt and covert measures associated with it and the linking of the two sides of the pedigree model, you know, with the right side and left side in a logical data model. Okay? So who pays for the system, which is even a better question. You know, if regulatory mandates this stuff, obviously there's going to be a huge increase in cost here. You know, and McKesson deals with literally thousands of local pharmacies. And we call them, in different parts of the country, we call them mom and pops. You know, suddenly if we put in an RFID system that is associated with, you know, a more sophisticated system, can these pharmacies be able to authenticate the product when we receive it? You know, do they have the cost infrastructure to do so? You know, I know we need standards. Okay. I'm also part of the information work group. We're working within the bag. You know, we really need to have is, you know, the information model, the logical models, you know, the flow that's associated with it. You guys, I know some of the speakers here today attempted to bridge into that, you know, without talking about it. But, you know, we really need the rules as an IT organization to do synchronization, validation, ownership, retention, security. You know, Florida says we have to keep the records for our pedigree for 3 years. You know, we generate... I don't know. I'm not going to go through the numbers of McKesson, but we, you know, there's a lot of orders. We generate an order for each customer every day of the year in Florida. You know, that we do an overnight delivery model. So how many pedigrees do we need to create for every product there is there? We cannot afford to create a paper pedigree-based system. And Florida allows a paper pedigree system, and there's no integrity in a paper pedigree system, really. Okay. This is a little bit about evolution of hardware, software, and integration. But you know, if you look at all the different architectural stacks and stuff, there is that middleware is like expanding to the edge, and the middleware is expanding upward into the enterprise. So there's no static model, so to speak, of technology. Here we are moving from Gen 1 to Gen 2. So, you know, we're talking about agile readers. You know, we're talking about we haven't really come up with a sense of understanding. What are the firm frequencies associated with what we're going to do? How are we going to write these tags? And what should be on the tags? And then we have the performance issues with island-level tagging still to decide. So, you know, I think Chuck and Mike here really said the same things here. We really need your help here. You know, help us resolve these issues here so that we can get this, you know, patient safety issue addressed. So a summary of issues here. Top of the list is really for us in healthcare. You know, we're guided by HIPAA rules. We're guided by many different privacy and security practices already. You know, we need one that allow us to do what we need to do and not lose the confidence of what we have in our healthcare consumer base today. You know, we cannot allow that to erode. You know, so again, where's the data? You know, how are we going to hold that data? You know, the healthcare industry model today is held very closely to the vest, the data. You know, so we need to come up with models that allow us to expand beyond our current supply chain model and say what is the economics associated with it. Product identification schema, you know, again, we talked about it in many different forums here today, you know, a local schema versus a global schema. Obviously, the manufacturers have a global business, and yet the NDC number, which is the primary product identifier here in America, is used for claims processing also. So, you know, in a pharmacy, for them not to have that NDC number on the product is a big deal, okay? You know, and also, Item level tagging was talked about by Chuck, obviously, in detail. Forward and reverse logistic participation. Obviously, the model, if you look at the Florida model, it doesn't start with a manufacturer. It starts with a wholesaler, okay? There's a few supply chain participants missing there in the middle here. So, you know, and so, I mean, including logistics guys, right? So, you know, we believe that really the best pedigree model contains all participants in the supply chain, right? There can't be going from one step to step three and okay, and step two maybe if you have the time, you know. So what we're looking for is really a state and FDA e-pedigree model. We're looking for an electronic model. You know, electronic models, I believe the pedigree model itself is a pretty uniform model in the sense that the problem that you can address in terms of a pedigree model for healthcare can apply to consumer packaged goods. It can apply to, the clothing industry, for example, right? So the model is pretty clear, but we need to define one across industries, and I would think I would add significantly to the adoption associated with it. Tag frequency, technology maturity, you know, I caution, as a business, we have X number of dollars each year to invest into technology. You know, what we need to have is an evolutionary step. You know, we can't slowly evolve. You know, we got to have checkpoints along the way. I was talking to John earlier over lunch about the concept of, you know, we have to set the future vision of where we're going to go, right? Where are we going to be 2 years from now, 3 years from now, wherever the slice and dice is, okay? But at the end of year one, we have to say to ourselves, to say, we're all going to be X12 by this date. And be able to accomplish these type of things. So that's what we're looking for here as an industry, because we can't do this incremental adoption approach because it's a huge infrastructure we have to change overnight. Okay, it took us 30 years to get the barcode maturity. We cannot wait 30 years for RFID to become mature. Okay, we all understand the product identification strength and the need for product identification, and the glory associated with understanding what else we can do with additional bits of information that we never had with the linear barcode. So, what's a rational adoptions approach? You know, for us, for McKesson, the wholesale distributor, what percentage of product has to be enabled for us to make that a non-parallel set of technology, so to speak? You know, I can't be scanning product with barcodes in one hand and then using RFID on the other. It doesn't save me any time if I close the tote and I have to open it back up to scan those products are not RFID enabled versus guys that are barcode enabled. So we have to reach a level of maturity and adoption as quickly as possible. And that would entail, that would be everybody in the supply chain again. And then that goes back to the cost dollars and goes back to the evolutionary aspects of it. So, it's really not a focus on technology. I don't want to make the, you know, I know we're a technology group here. We really, really need to focus on the long-term vision in terms of a business set of requirements and saying we're going to sell safe and secure, we're going to sell reverse logistics or operational efficiencies. One may follow the other on a logical basis, but when you develop a sense of solutions, and when I say e-pedigree, that to me that's a business scenario. And what are supporting technologies that allow us to get to step one and then further out a second step associated with it? And that's all I really have to say. I want to keep to our time here. So I'm sure we're up here for a few questions here.
Thank you very much. If we could come down to the front of the room for any questions. You just handed us a big menu. Picking up on themes from throughout the day.
Hi, I'm Alfonso Gutierrez from the University of Wisconsin, Madison. In the beginning of the presentation, you got a big slide saying that it's for the patient safety. We're working in some of the supply chain on the blood products on supply chain. And a big issue that we're dealing with is the patient identification. I mean, this is for the patient, and at the end of all of this is a patient who's receiving this. Different than the consumer products, we have to tie it with the patient. It's not that in the consumer that we can just kind of send the product out and we don't care who bought it. who's dealing with this? Who's skinning this cat of the patient identification? Should it be in parallel with all of these?
I think it's an excellent point. I think this whole area of linking prescriptions, devices, because the common point of connection is the patient, right? So you really don't see anyone solving that problem right now. One hope on the horizon, though, is there's quite a bit of movement in the government, Dr. Braler's organization, that's looking at helping improve the healthcare system via application of IT. That's an area that is taking a look at this. So we would expect some of the work that's going on there may eventually move in that particular direction. The other area, there's an association called NAHIT, National Association of Healthcare Information Technology, that is it's certainly within their brief, and they commissioned a study last year around the adoption of RFID and other auto ID technologies, not just for products but also for patients too. So I agree with you, it's an issue, but it's still very fragmented, needs to be brought together in a more coordinated manner.
From my perspective, is that RFID and patient identification probably don't go together on the same chip, so to speak. I think that there's a privacy, you know, the HIPAA laws. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the federal HIPAA laws, Healthcare Insurance Portability Accountability Act. You know, that requires that data be secured and have privacy concerns associated with the linking of a personally identifiable information. So I probably don't think it'll be on the product, you know, that you get from the pharmacy. Okay, there might be a pharmacy number or you know, script number, but that would be, you know, again, the patient information will be stored by the pharmacist. Additionally, there's another agency called HIMSS, Healthcare Information Management, the two S's, systems along that line. You're right. Again, electronic medical record is the solution here somewhere along the way. You know, there's also in the federal bodies here that are looking at, you know, trying to develop electronic medical records. So,
one of the areas that we may be able to help you out with is that our parent company, GS1, and specifically GS1 in Ireland, has done quite a bit of work with BloodTrack, and they've done serialization in the spring. They'll be moving to the RFID tracking of blood products in Ireland. So that may be of interest to you.
Seems cool in MIT. Actually, we're doing some marketing research of the RFID in the drug tracking business. We found actually the business is growing very fast, the market size. Like in 2006, it's going to be 25%, and 2007, it's going to be 30%. Till 2011, it's going to be 40%, and it's going to really exceed like $1 billion US dollars. And I noticed that you have a summary of issues. One thing I'm specifically interested in, obviously didn't get a chance to explore more, is the data network, I mean, central or distributed, and also the secure access when you have all this, like, networked the software located everywhere, probably globally. How, like, is there any initiation, or if there's any research in that area, like, so how you guarantee the data is right before you get it into the network?
So one of the things that we'll be doing this year is the track and trace effort, and that will first off define a vocabulary that the healthcare industry will use to identify events and understand them from a business perspective. Part of that, again, overlaid everything, is the security aspect. And so we're looking to partner with, in this case, a software action group around security around the network to ensure that data is safe. But that's part of our 2006 effort.
Again, it's part of the development of the entire. If you're looking at just an e-pedigree alone, you're going to have to define rules, business process rules as to who, at what point is it, you know, what part of the record, so to speak, an e-pedigree record is created. You know, who creates a track, who creates a trace, who creates the authentication side, you know, the product identification side, and which part of the supply chain, in terms of the supply chain participants, are required to update, required to update this. Because, you know, if you run a good pedigree, all the players have to play, and each of them have a role to play.
Hi there. I've got a question regarding chemical and thermal stability of drug compounds. Can you say anything on tests you've done with respect to different frequency of different RFID systems and the outcomes?
It's an area, and I know the auto ID labs here at MIT have proposed a study. It's an area that's still out for investigation. Without divulging anything, some companies have done some work that we're aware of, but it's not been made public yet. Okay. And I think what's going to be required, and I think you're going to see the FDA has a meeting on February 8th and 9th. It's going to be another call for companies to come forward with public data. They made that call at the NEC, the SHDMA meeting back last fall. I think the challenge that companies have around this investigation is you know, what's the design of experiment? You know, what's the endpoint of that experiment? And that's what everyone's kind of struggling with right now.
Okay, thanks.
So thank you very much to the panel.